Molo Samanani Hello Houses. Welcome to the Big Daddy Liberty Show. It is a Friday. You know what it means. It means your favorite fat boy and classical liberal is on your radio waves. Good morning, guys. I know there's a little bit of feedback that will clear up in a moment. Good morning. It is a Friday morning, as I said. Remember, the Big Daddy Liberty Show, the podcast, comes to you every Friday here, syndicated here on Chai FM and hopefully on more radio stations soon. But it's good to have you guys on and listening live to the show. I have a very jam-packed show for you today, which, of course, will be podcasted later and available on all your favorite podcast streams and, of course, on the BDL Facebook and YouTube page. So you can look forward to that a little later. I have a very interesting show for you today. It's mostly just analysis. You know, as we look at the news week, really, that was... And we zoom in on some of the top issues, perhaps, that dominated the news week. But before I get into any of that, a quick reminder that this show is brought to you in conjunction with Chai FM and the Big Daddy Liberty Show. And I just want to thank them, because I haven't in a while, thank them for availing their space to me. As always on the show, we begin by looking at the news week that was, a little bit of analysis as to the headlines, what you read, what made you angry, what's topical right now. And hopefully in future I'll be able to bring in some interaction with you as the viewers, either on through my social media, which you can do already right now, by basically tweeting me on at Big Daddy Liberty on Twitter, or you can even send me a Facebook message by just going to the Big Daddy Liberty page, and you can get your comments in and I'll read them on air. So as always, as I say, we begin the show by looking at the news week that was. Have a brief little chat around what I think the top issues were and why they are significant. And, you know, maybe a bit of analysis from my side on those. And of course, after the first break, which will be in a minute or so, we have our guests today. Today I have two guests, two guys who are also YouTubers in their own right. Joe Emilio from The Joe Emilio Show. We'll have him after the break. And of course, Jimmy Ramakgopa, who is a regular on the Big Daddy Liberty Show online. He's also a YouTuber and really someone who I think you will be very interested in hearing some of his views, very diverse views today. And we'll have a conversation just on the news week that was and some of the big news items. In particular, we're going to dwell on the issue of Eskom and the pressure that was mounted on the president for him to go to level two. So you can look forward to that conversation after the break. And as always, after the interview, we'll end the show by looking at who the Moomish of the week is. So you can look forward to that. That will wrap up the show. So let me go to my first break. After that, let's have a chat on the news week that was. Guys, welcome back to the Big Daddy Liberty Show. Yeah, as I said before the break, we always begin the show by looking at the news week that was, really. You know, some of the things that maybe I covered on the show. Remember, you can watch the Big Daddy Liberty Show on all your favorite social media outlets. Just go to Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube, and hit that link, like button, and that subscribe button so you can always catch the show every Wednesday and Sunday. This week is a particularly interesting one for me, because to a large extent, I feel as though, and where do I begin this? Because, you know, obviously the news items that dominated the week was the breaking news. And again, based on media reports, by News 24 primarily, that after a meeting on Sunday, the president of this country literally heard a overwhelming majority of arguments from within government and different spheres of government for there to be a loosening of lockdown regulations. In other words, a move to, in inverted commas, level two. And of course, the removal of these arbitrary, and really they are arbitrary, regardless of the feigned arguments around them, the arbitrary restrictions on tobacco and liquor in this country. Now, you'll know that last week on the BDL show, I had a conversation with, you know, two people who are in both of those sectors. That is, you know, a tobacco farmer, that's Herman Ruiz, if you remember that conversation, and Natasha Zitzman, who is a liquor trader. And both of those individuals ably and rightly detailed the absolute misery, the absolute untold pain of what it means to have a politician almost in a populist manner with a single stroke of a pen implement an arbitrary ban like the one we have seen with, you know, the alcohol and liquor. Excuse me, alcohol and tobacco. And we've seen the economic cost and really the social cost too that has come with that. So it was very interesting then to read this news piece by News 24 suggesting that at this meeting, different levels and different spheres of government on the National Coronavirus Command Council and some other joint operation, blah, 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 you know, government and their acronyms, basically in unison said, look, we're struggling to justify these decisions to our constituents. Like, we're not able to actually describe in real terms, in a lucid, rational way, what the real basis of these bans and restrictions are. And that is a very powerful point for someone to get to in government, especially when for the past 130-something days now of lockdown, they've been with a hard-headed approach suggesting that they know exactly what they're doing and that they're in control. It tells you a story, and I asked the question in my vlog this week. This is vlog 43, which you can catch on the YouTube channel. I asked the question, is the political pressure rather beginning to tell a story that is prompting ANC politicians in government to now act on this issue? In other words, is a politician, because remember, a politician's sole considerations really are two things. Number one, the acquisition of power at all costs. The acquisition of power at all costs. And number two, the retention of power at all costs. And those two things often mean that service delivery and being of service to your fellow man can sometimes even be secondary, if not incidental, because the acquisition and retention of power becomes the sole goals of a politician. And it's on that basis that I ask the question, are we therefore seeing really moves in this direction only because the politicians are facing a threat to those first two things? In other words, acquiring power and really retaining that power. Because it cannot be denied, and I think it would be foolhardy to continue trying to deny, that there hasn't been a political fallout for the ANC as a government, given these bans, and really beyond the bans, how South Africans as citizens have been treated throughout this lockdown. People being beaten up in the streets, images, initially at least, of soldiers again on our streets, reminiscent of the apartheid days and the states of emergency. It cannot be said that none of this will have an impact on the electorate. And there are fears, therefore. An article I read on the Daily Friend website, remember dailyfriend.co.za, where it argued and it just demonstrated that there is a movement by ANC politicians and EFF politicians to even postpone, perhaps, the elections. And I ask myself, could that be because there is a recognition that the ANC may very well not find itself being as popular as it thinks it is in the next election? Perhaps it'll struggle to bring out ANC voters. I asked this question in a vlog. Because it's important things that we need to think about as South Africans, generally. And in more broad terms, as South Africans, leaving aside all the politics, we need to ask ourselves going forward, what sort of relationship do we really want with the state? How can we revolutionize, and I don't mean that in terms of taking to the streets and, you know, burning things and, you know, don't think French revolution, but rather intellectual revolution in this country around the political culture. How do we revolutionize that, where we actually return the state to being a servant of the public and not a tyrant or a beast that controls us as citizens? That's a question I think that, you know, even as I sit here on radio and I talk about this, I think everybody, regardless of where you are on the political spectrum and really regardless of who you vote for, because I couldn't care less about that. But what I do care about is what we united as South Africans view as the political culture of our society. Does it lean on the side of liberty and freedom, where it is the individual? And really, I talk a lot about the individual. Really, we're a family society. But does it lean on the side of families being the most important centerpiece of society? Or does it continue on the current trajectory, excuse me, that has endured since apartheid and even colonial days, where it is the state that is elevated to being the most important centerpiece of society, and the consequences of that can be rather atrocious. That's the question I think I was left with in terms of my looking at the Newsweek generally, and maybe assessing the overall impact of it. The overall impact of the Newsweek, given where we are as South Africans. Because then you begin to understand why. If you answer the question of who you value in a society, do you value the individual and families, or do you value government? You then begin to understand, when you view things in that context, why things maybe go badly as they do. For instance, with Eskom, the absolute decay of Eskom, where in the one hand we're hearing in media reports that we might be moving to level two, and then almost instantly, and rather amusingly, Eskom then pipes in and says, well, actually, how about I move you guys to stage two? Load shedding. I mean, I giggle about this, but really, there's actually really nothing funny about this. Food for thought, dear listener. Food for thought. And we're going to pick up this conversation really more with my two guests. You know, we'll just chew the fat on this wonderful Friday on an Erev Shabbos. After the break, Jimmy Ramakgopa and Joe Emilio will join me on the show. All right, guys, welcome back to the Big Daddy Liberty Show. As I mentioned before the break, I'm just going to establish my guests on the line. I can see Jimmy is on. Jimmy, good morning, my brother. How are you doing?
Good morning, I'm well, thanks. And how are you?
Excellento. Jimmy, just as a note, you can actually turn off the video function because that will improve the sound quality. So let me just check if I have Joe on the line. Joe, good morning. Are you on the line with us? Joe, good morning. All right, we seem to not have Joe on the line, but that's quite fine. Jimmy, Yazzie, I was setting up before the break that, you know, I wanted to have the two of you, and I'm sure we'll keep trying to get Joe on. I wanted to have the two of you on the show because I think it's important for us to just, you know, for a change, unpack the Newsweek and really provide some analysis from very differing perspectives. You know, all three of us, once we have Joe, come from very different perspectives on issues. But I think we're very conscious, nonetheless, on not only the particular issues that we'll discuss, for example, Eskom, I lost my train of thought for a second. From issues such as Eskom and the hearing now that, according to news reports that broke on Wednesday, that we might be heading, or rather, that Cyril Ramaphosa was told by cabinet and the various structures, including the NCCC, that, you know, he was told to basically move to level two and lift these bans on things. That there's an overall sentiment to these things, isn't there? So let me begin here. Let me put it to you this way. Before we get into the nitty gritties, Jimmy, I've always said that there is a depression that has set on the country. There's an almost negative energy that sets in. What's been your read as we now sit at 130 something days of the lockdown?
Well, in my opinion, I think that the inevitable is happening. The government is probably running out of money. They're running out of plans. I think the UIF scheme is running out. So it's becoming clear that they have literally no control of what's happening with regards to trying to stabilize the economy post-lockdown. And it's not surprising that now more of the people within the ANC are seeing this reality and hence pushing for a less restrictive economy. The UIF thing was only meant to go on for only 3 months. Mm. So a lot more people are becoming hungrier. And I think the chickens have come to roost in this case.
I would agree with you on that. And as I say that, I'm happy to announce that Joe Emilio has joined us. We're having a bit of technical glitches early on. Joe Emilio, of course, is a stand-up comedian based in Cape Town. He's been performing comedy for about 10 years, all around Cape Town. And he's a YouTuber. He's someone who I think you can catch on the show, and you must watch his show, please. That's Joe Emilio on YouTube. Joe, welcome to it. How are you doing, man?
I'm good, Sikhli. How are you, man? It's good to chat to you again. Thanks for having me.
Awesome, my brother. And, you know, as I set out before you joined us, that, you know, we're just going to have a if I can call it a lazy Friday off morning chat, if anything. Let's call it the morning breakfast chat, if anything. you know, looking at the news week that was, and maybe dwelling on a few areas, and, you know, the question I'd posed to Jim, and I also want you to weigh in on it, is, you know, it does seem, because Jimmy's in Johannesburg, and Joe, you're here in Cape Town, but it does seem that there's an almost collective depression that has set into the country, isn't there? As we said, on 130 plus days of lockdown. What's your view been on this?
Okay, well, first off, let me say hi to Jimmy. Nice to meet you as well, Jimmy. I've noticed, yeah, there's been a definite change in atmosphere, if I can put it that way, throughout the lockdown. You know, everybody at the beginning was like, yeah, let's do this, and well done, and woohoo, and we're getting on top of this. And then you just saw a shift midway, and I think people are very frustrated, angry. The more we're stuck at home, the more we're seeing or watching the government doing what they're doing, and it's clear that they're like Jimmy just mentioned. You know, they can feel they're losing control. I mean, let's be honest for a second. I've been driving around, you know, going to the shops and stuff like that when I need to. There's no lockdown, to be honest. Like, there's no one's listening to it. There's people, there's kids playing soccer. There's no social distancing, except for when you're in a mall or in a shop where obviously it's regulated. But for the most part, I see people driving, doing their own thing. No one's really listening. And I think in the article, it even stated, like, people are still smoking. People are still drinking. It's ridiculous now, and it needs to stop. We need to get this economy back online.
That's right. And maybe let me zoom in on the issue, because, again, the basis of my vlog 43 on the show this week was exactly this, you know. There was a report in one of the newspapers in this country, I won't name it, that, you know, the big headline was, you know, breaking. Cyril Ramaphosa told to end the ban on alcohol, on alcohol and cigarettes, and move to level 2 of the lockdown. This is according to sources in this particular report. And of course, some of the arguments made, alleging what was said in a meeting on Sunday, you know, with all the head honchos in government, you know, with the various constituents in government, you know, tourism, police, and, you know, you name it, guys. Basically saying two basic arguments, according to this report. Number one, they are struggling to justify this lockdown and its rules to their constituents. That was a very telling argument, because it seemed as though the feedback loop was one where, you know, the state says one thing, and industry and really stakeholders in society argue what's the rationale for this, and then there's a struggle, of course, by the state to describe the reasoning behind this, which is a big problem for a government, because, you know, the Constitution basically argues all decisions made by the state must be rational and fair. That was the first thing I really picked up, and I want you guys to chip in just now on that. But the second was this idea that according to the sort of justice cluster, let me just actually quickly open this article so I can almost quote it, because we have a little bit of time, guys. No need to rush. You know, the other one was this group called the Forum of South African Directors Generals, FOSAD, which basically argued that, you know, in real terms, if we look at the work that the police and the Defense Department are saying, no one's actually adhering to this, as Joe was saying. In fact, the quote here is, it was argued that the economy, open quote, is mostly open, so we have to look at the other remaining sectors. When we are in meetings with sectors, it continues to say, we can't justify the ruin of the economy, close quote. And this is according to a government insider. And of course, the security cluster is basically saying, you know, trying to police cigarettes and alcohol and this stuff, you know, there was an acknowledgement that these restrictions just didn't work. Guys, let me come to you on this one. There's two broad things I want you to opine on. Jimmy, let me begin with you. I made a point in vlog 43 where I said you can't have years upon years, 26 years of eroding institutions like the police and the army, and then expect those same eroded institutions to enforce something as restrictive and as almost authoritarian as a lockdown. It simply didn't work, did it? People were just breaking the law anyway.
Look, by default, the rule of law and South Africa are things that don't necessarily work well together or don't happen together. I'll also quote a rather different article to that one that you've just mentioned, where a group of investigative journalists actually went to the township and actually started trying to find out where people get their cigarettes, where people get their alcohol. And it came out from the ground that some of the trade has police officers involved in it. So sometimes when they need transportation, they'd use one of the police vans to transport the alcohol or the cigarettes.
Wow.
But another important thing to note is that when the illegal trade of cigarettes started, you'd buy a cigarette for about 20 rand a pop. It then went down to 10 rand a pop.
Mm.
Right now, in the black market, in the townships, it's going for 4 rand a pop.
Wow.
So what does that say? It says that the demand, even though the demand is high, and there are more competitors in the game.
That's right.
So now you have a huge supply of illegal cigarettes in the market. So eventually, the price of a cigarette will probably reach the same amount that you'd get the legal route.
Absolutely.
And on top of this, not only is it a growing industry from empirical evidence, it's an industry that doesn't pay tax.
Mm.
So, which then reinforces the whole argument that banning cigarettes is a complete waste of time and money.
No, I agree, and I want to pass it to you, Joe, because it's the prohibition argument, isn't it? You know, and I've had the show on the YouTube channel where we argued, rightly so, looking at the record of history, that you simply as a government cannot prohibit things that people in a society view as being ordinary and mundane and essential to their everyday life. It's impossible to ban those things. America found that out in the 20s with the alcohol prohibition. Do I know maybe weigh in on that?
Yeah, no, absolutely. Anytime you make something illegal that people are used to having, people are going to find a way to cheat the system or find a way to get it. And this lockdown proves it. You know, the government can flex their muscles all they want, but at the end of the day, people are finding a way to either make alcohol or buy alcohol. They're finding a way to make cigarettes or sell cigarettes, buy cigarettes. It's the same thing. I was even chatting to a police officer, who I will not mention the name, but I was chatting to a police officer as well, and he told me that the police don't even arrest you anymore if they catch you with cigarettes. Like, they don't care. because a lot of them are smokers as well, and they just kind of, you know, go somewhere in a corner, they have a quick cigarette, and then they get back to work. They really themselves are not even enforcing that ridiculous ban on cigarettes. So yeah, it's not surprising to me what Jimmy said as well about the police officers. And going back to the whole prohibition thing, look, I think the government's also running out of things to ban, to be honest. I'm surprised they didn't. I wish they would have banned Crocs. That would have been amazing and would have made sense. But no, they're banning things that, again, they can't hold up the evidence. I mean, the court case, when they were talking about the ban on cigarettes, they said, after a few days, your lungs start to repair themselves, so it's good for people. That's just incorrect. That's scientifically incorrect. Your lungs don't start to heal themselves until about 8-9 months later of not smoking at all. You know, my wife is an ex-smoker and only started to feel almost normal a year after she was done smoking, because she used to smoke like 2 bucks a day, and this was like 2 years ago.
Sure.
So, you know, it's astounding to me that the government is getting away with saying such lies. And I don't know who these scientists are. I don't know where these scientists come from with these experiments that they've done, claiming that, you know, oh, well, if you're one day sober from cigarettes, then, you know, you're healthy now.
Well, the irony is, Joe, just to make that your point even more salient, is that it does seem that even the scientists who government had brought on initially as being their go-to for supposedly advice. You know, the likes of Abo Professor Glenda Gray, etc., are actually distancing themselves from the decisions that are now being taken by politicians. You know, today's major headline is, you know, and I'll just read the headline. Unequivocally, it says, as a pediatrician and a parent, I believe schools should be open. That's Professor Glenda Gray, Gray, in the newspapers this morning. Again, underpinning, Jimmy, doesn't it, that it seemed as though from initially there being a common purpose, if you will, a unity of purpose, ever increasingly the rift grew wider and wider and wider between what the politicians wanted, and you could see their agenda, versus what the science says and really who we are as a society.
Yeah, absolutely. I think... Yeah. Sorry, Jimmy, go ahead.
Yeah. No. I was just going to agree with that and just say, and it just points out to the quality of leadership that we have in our country. Just to something interesting about the one of the reasons why they chose to ban cigarettes was a recommendation from the World Health Organization. And I actually had a look at some of the reasons that were stipulated there. Sure, they did mention the dangers of smoking, but they didn't have a direct link between the dangers of smoking and banning it and how it would actually help us in the long run. And because that on its own was a weak argument, you could see that they were trying to scramble for other arguments. And the other argument, that a poor argument that came out of the World Health Organization, was that when you smoke, there's a chance of you transferring a potential virus from your hand to your lips and ultimately into your system.
Yeah, when you zone.
And it, yeah, no, not from Zoli. it's actually ridiculous that they even have like an infograph about it showing someone's fingers going close to the mouth and that being the potential danger and that being the whole reason of prohibiting cigarettes. It's actually ridiculous. The quality and the level of logic imposed on that, and that actually speaks a lot to the quality of leadership that we have by simply going with such a low level of logic to justify something that cripples a huge rather a significant part of the economy is really worth considering, you know?
I fully agree, and I'll come to you just now, Joe, sorry. You know, but like, just to maybe, you know, echo and agree with Jimmy's point around just the actually rather insulting of our intelligence by the state. You know, it went to great lengths to piece together like these theories. You know, there's this meme on social media of this guy, you know, sort of standing in front of a graph with string all over and maps, and you know, he has this sort of wild look of like, you know, the grand plan type look. And it almost felt like, you know, we have politicians who have firmly started to believe their own lie, that South Africans are just dumb, and that you can just tell them any story and we accept it. And I think it's that panic then, the moral panic also by politicians when they realize that South Africans aren't accepting us and really that they've eroded as politicians their authority over people when people are just openly disobedient as they are. And again, I don't say that as a judgment on the people. It's not an indictment on the people. The people haven't done anything wrong. But you then get this moral panic. Guys, just a quick note. I have to take a break in a minute or so, but I will bring you guys back on for another 10 minutes just as we close the conversation, and I want to ask a few things. I am in conversation with Jimmy Ramakgopa, who's the founder, of course, of the CoLab movement and Politrix SA. You can check him out on social media. And, of course, Joe Elliott. I've got two J's on the show today. Joe Emilio, who is also a YouTuber and someone who I think you should check out. Please look out for the Joe Emilio Show online. A quick break, and then I come back with these gentlemen as we look at other issues that dominated the Newsweek. All right, guys, welcome back to the Big Daddy Liberty Show. We are cooking with Greece now. We are at the 40th minute mark. Welcome to it. My name is Big Daddy Liberty. I am in studio. I'm so used to saying studio, but I am joined by Joe Emilio, who, of course, is a South African YouTuber and really someone who ever increasingly you'll also see a lot on the BDL show. Really awesome guy. Please check out his YouTube channel by just searching Joe Emilio on YouTube. And of course, Ujimi Ramakgopa, who is the founder of the Collab Movement, as I mentioned, and also a host of a an online show, Politrix SA. You can also find that on YouTube. Fellas, as we maybe shift a little bit gears, I want to look at the news week ahead by both what's happening right now as we speak and where we see things perhaps going. As we head into the new week next week, there seems to be a growing number of these protest movements. I can call them that, both protest in terms of being online and protesting, and of course, you know, some that are actually taking it to the streets. Let me be specific. I mean, right now I'm sort of reading a headline here that there's a group calling themselves Gatfall citizens, who are going to be marching to Luthuli House, calling for Ramaphosa's removal. That's Cyril Ramaphosa, the president of the ANC and the country. And let me just quickly read here. The group claims that Ramaphosa has, quote, sold out the country to his white and foreign friends, close quote. That's already a concern if I see people using race as a means of mobilizing. But anyway, and they say if he's not recalled, the ruling party stands to lose political power. The national organizer, the last line, the national organizer of the march, A1 Mduduzi Nkambule, told the news group on Thursday that Ramaphosa must go, open quote, or face nationwide protest, close quote. Jimmy, what do you think about this? Is this does this sound legit to you, or does this sound like ANC factional politics playing out?
Look, the Gatfall group, if I'm not mistaken, seem to be the Brown Lives Matter movement, if I'm not mistaken, because I saw some of those group, I think, symbols or some of the same rhetoric in the Cape Town group. If I'm not mistaken, I think they're the same.
No. Look, I think this is a group just using the name Gatfall, but I was going to let Joe chip in on that one. Joe, maybe, do you want to quickly come in?
Well, it's look, I think any protest that is happening at the moment is a sign that people are getting, for lack of a better word, khatful, of this lockdown. You have a nearly 50%, or I think it's hit 50% unemployment rate in this country because of the lockdown. The economy is suffering. I know so many people in my circles that have lost their jobs, their livelihoods, the restaurants that they own. Because as a comedian, I used to organize comedy shows at restaurants, and I became friends with my clients and the people I worked with, and they've lost their job. They've lost their livelihood. You know, me as a comedian, I can't. There's nothing. There's absolutely nothing for me unless I'm a well-known comedian that gets big corporate work. You know, it's very hard to perform or do a corporate gig or any of that stuff. And every day that is going by, you can see an increase in the frustration of the everyday citizen in South Africa. People are hurting, families are suffering, and it needs to stop. So I am in a way happy to see protests. I just don't agree when they get violent. I don't think violence will solve anything. I think it will put us in an even more, or divide us even more, because then people start talking about it and yeah, people get hurt. I don't agree with that. But I do agree that people have the right to voice their frustrations, and it's Cyril should be alarmed right now. He should be shivering in his boots. He should be paying attention and listening to the people.
Jimmy, I want to come back to you, because what I was trying to angle at is, you know, do you see what these, as Joe rightly mentions, you know, the rising number of people protesting and being, quote, cut for, do you see a similarity between the Zuma must go unified type protests, or are these protests, as I see them perhaps, because they're all from very different corners and hookies. Are you seeing maybe mm-hmm. some factional politics play and some guys with other agendas, or are these also a united front as we saw under Zuma Moscow? What are your views on this?
Look, there will always be people with agendas within any movement. That's what I've noticed over the years. Even legitimate movements. You can have a movement that advocates for the rights of people of color, or the rights of farmers, or the rights of the LGBTQI plus community. But within the totally legitimate concerns that are raised within those particular movements, there will always be people who come in and overtake it. And this happens all the time, especially when you try to formalize movements and you try to create organizations out of movements. As we have seen, like with the Black Lives Matter movement, all of a sudden there's an organization that supposedly represents the views, and they have their own agendas behind them, you know. The founding cause is legitimate, but when organizations start coming in and people start coming in and leaders want to come in and sort of like place themselves as custodians of such movements, that's when you have the problems, right? So I wouldn't be surprised that even the Hatful movement that's emerging right now, I wouldn't be surprised if it is overtaken by an inverted commas, more formalized type of people with hidden agendas. The same thing that happened with the Zuma Must Fall, the EFF jumped onto the bandwagon. The same thing that happened with Fees Must Fall. Fees Must Fall, when it started, the initial protests were a group of students from all backgrounds, from all races. And sure, there were student protests before the infamous one, but when the Fees Must Fall really broke out, the main concern was with the high increase in terms of the student fees. And everyone was concerned about that. But soon after, it was soon overtaken by the likes of the EFF Student Command, who just turned it into chaos and just turned it violent. So that's my only concern when you talk about movements, when you talk about people organizing, when you talk about protests, is that more often than not, they become hijacked by people with mm-hmm. personal agendas.
Guys, I must look at one more thing because I'm pressed for time. We have about 2 minutes, but I want you guys to get a word in on each of these issues. The issue of schools opening and reopening, opening and reclosing and opening again. What are your thoughts on this? I don't know if any of you have children yourselves in school, but Joe, what are your thoughts on this?
Well, I don't have kids, but I know people with kids. And the thing is, like, it's been shown that kids are not as susceptible to this pandemic as people think, and they should be allowed to go to school. There's no reason, I think, to end or stop school at all. There seems to be a great group of parents that want their kids to go to school. But, I mean, even having said that, there are many ways in which kids can still be involved in school with the online platforms that are available and all that stuff. So that's what really confuses me, because some schools have actually gone online and yet we're closing the schools. That part doesn't make sense to me. Okay. But again, I don't have kids, so I feel like my opinion is limited on this issue. Sorry.
Jimmy, your view? Because I think, as Joe says, you know, the evidence points that kids are not as susceptible to this virus as we're being told. Your thoughts?
Yeah, on a personal level, I've never had a problem with kids going back to school. My younger brother is in matric. He goes to school. Mm-hmm. There's no issue whatsoever, because the data suggests that the risks are much less for kids going to school.
Yeah, and again, maybe it's a closing thought from my side. I might pick this up in the show on Wednesday. There seems to be some politicians who are using this issue as a something to mobilize under and scaremonger, which just adds to the confusion perhaps for ordinary parents. But yo, guys, I have run out of time. I must thank both of you for joining me on the show. And again, I think you guys are going to become a bit of a regular in terms of revolving voices I have to provide analysis on the show. Let me thank both Joe and Jimmy. Jimmy, of course, is the founder of the CoLab movement and Politrix SA. And of course, Joe Emilio, South African YouTuber and the host of the Joe Emilio Show, who I really encourage you to search out on YouTube. Guys, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you
so much.
Awesome, guys. After the break, we end off the show by looking at this week's Momish of the Week. But yeah, interesting conversation with those two lads. And again, I reiterate, these are two guys who are going to become, amongst other voices that provide analysis, regulars on the BDL podcast. And I just want to thank them both. Remember, this show will be podcasted. It'll be available from about 12 p.m. today onwards on all your favorite podcast streams from Spotify, Apple, Iono, you name it. And of course, I will upload it onto my YouTube and Facebook pages. With that being said, as we always end off the show, who is the Momish of the Week, the loser of the week? And it has to go to the people who always make it incredibly difficult in this country to conduct business or just go about your daily lives. You know, they contribute greatly to the traffic jams in South Africa. They contribute greatly to candle sales in South Africa. I'm talking, of course, about Eskom. Yes, that's right. The power utility in this country, the sole provider, effectively, of electricity, the government entity that we call Eskom, the absolute terrible behemoth of a monster that, you know, you would think with having the sole power to provide electricity in an economy like ours, that you'd be making a booming trade. It clearly isn't the case. In fact, they're even struggling to provide electricity. Eskom announcing this week that it was plunging South Africa back again into stage 2 load shedding. And the misery that comes with that. You know, in some parts of the country, you sit for 4 hours without electricity. In others, you know, for 2. It's absolutely insane that we continue to put up with a power utility in this country that is unable to do its one and only job. I mean, it's ridiculous. It's a bit like having a taxi and a taxi driver, and then that taxi driver telling you, you know, I actually can't drive a taxi. It's weird. It is absolutely weird that we put up with this and that we've begun to normalize it. And that's the danger of living in a society where you accept that the state should have a legitimate role in doing things. As that state continuously fails to do that thing, as is the case with Eskom, what we do as people is, you know, we sort of gradually shift our expectations to be in line with the declining service. So you're now seeing people not even complain about load shedding. You know, we should sort of adapt around it, even as the service continues to degrade further and further. So Momish of the Week has to go to Eskom. What a loser indeed they are. Guys, with that being said, let me thank every single one of you for joining me on this week's show. Remember, the Big Daddy Liberty Show, the podcast, is syndicated here on Chai FM and will soon be on other radio stations, please God. And with that being said, let me wish all of you a fantastic Shabbos on this area of Shabbos. And I'm hoping your Shabbat will be peaceful and restful. I know I'm looking forward to Shabbos. So Shabbat Shalom to you guys. And I will see you next week, Friday, on the Big Daddy Liberty Show. I hope you guys will have a fantastic weekend. Goodbye.